Welcome to episode 59 of the Fredcast and stage 3 of the 2007 Amgen Tour of California. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome to part 3 of our week-long series of on-the-scene same-day coverage of the 2007 Amgen Tour of California. Today's race was the most exciting stage of the entire event thus far. I'll bring you a complete recap of the events that took place out on the course, but first, an interview with Bob Roll and a chat with USA Cycling's technical director. Then a recap of today's stage, including an interview with Saul Raisin and comments from the riders after the conclusion of the awards ceremony. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike hammer, just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, providing quality products and unparalleled customer service to the cycling community for over 20 years. And here's another reason to shop at Cambria. Use the promo code found in tonight's show notes at www.thefredcast.com for 20% off your entire order at Cambria Bike. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. Hey, speaking of our sponsor, Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, we are now in CBO territory. CBO's been out at the Lifestyle Expo at every stage of the event. They've had a booth and a trailer, and they've been selling products. And now we're about to head into their hometown of San Luis Obispo tomorrow for stage 4 as we go from Seaside down to San Luis Obispo. If you are going to the races and you stop by the CBO booth, let them know you heard about CBO on the Fredcast. I know that they'd appreciate hearing that. Now, let's get to today's events. Today's stage 3 started all the way up in Stockton, California, and headed its way all the way down to San Jose, California. At the starting line of today's event, I had a chance to chat with Bob Roll, former professional bicycle racer himself, and now one of the commentators for cycling on the Versus television network. I had a chat with Bob and asked him a little bit about his thoughts about the 2007 Amgen Tour of California. I'm at the start line for stage 3 of the Amgen Tour of California. I'm talking to Bob Roll. Bob, what do you think of the race so far?
The weather has cooperated. The people have come out. The best athletes in the world are here. You couldn't ask for a better scenario.
So what did you think of yesterday's racing? JJ came on extremely strong at the end. Any comments?
I wasn't surprised that he won, but the ease by which he did win was quite remarkable. He was many bike lengths ahead, and I think he was a little bit frustrated on the finish into Santa Rosa, where he didn't get a chance to sprint because it was so hectic, so chaotic, and so many riders switching all the way across the road. He had to brake really hard with a couple hundred meters to go, and by the time he relaunched his sprint into Santa Rosa, it was too late. So he left nothing to chance yesterday and absolutely demolished the fastest men in the world.
He got a really great setup yesterday, and one of the things he commented on was the fact that now he's on a team and he can get a great setup. How important do you think that is for a guy like JJ?
Well, in the domestic racing, he had a pretty good setup, but for the Pro Tour riders and sprinters like Hushovd and Graham Brown and Robert Forster from Gerold Steiner, and those teams are doing long lead-out trains for many kilometers, and Team CSC, obviously, with Cancellara, Bobby Julik, Stuart O'Grady, the equal of any team in the world. So JJ really benefited from that. Even Bobby Julik was doing a big lead out with a kilometer and a half to go. So for your sprinter, when you see your guys on the front, it gives you some extra incentive. And he produced a fantastic effort yesterday.
Now today could prove to be one of the toughest stages and perhaps a pivotal stage. You think Discovery is going to have some problems today?
Well, yeah, there'll be some attacks, but Levi has Hincapie, he's riding great. Basso, Danielson, I don't think, you know, he'll be isolated at all. Last year he came to the top of the climb with no teammates anywhere near him, so I don't think that they're going to have to worry about that too much today.
Okay, the Bob Roll prediction for Long Beach. Who do you think will be in the golden jersey?
I think Levi. I think he really wants to win. Zabriskie crashed out going into Santa Rosa. That was one of the big time trial threats. I think Levi or maybe one of his teammates, actually.
Well, there you have it. The official Bob Roll prediction that Levi Leipheimer will be in gold at the end of the day in Long Beach on Sunday. We'll see what happens. Today's stage was pretty interesting, and things got a little bit tighter up there in the general classification, so we're going to see whether or not that's actually going to stick. Well, just before the start, I headed over to the local Starbucks to get myself a little bit of caffeine and something to eat before I headed out onto the race course. And a couple of interesting things, and I urge you to go to www.thefredcast.com and check out the pictures there, because if you've ever wondered where professional cyclists like to eat their breakfast before they go out on a major stage race, you're going to find that the Leaky Goss team prefers Starbucks, because there were their steeds, their trusty steeds, laying next to the planter there in front of the Starbucks, and they were inside getting their jolt of Java before they headed out onto the race course. I thought that was pretty funny. Well, while I was standing in line at Starbucks, I ran into Sean Farrell. Now, Sean is the technical director for USA Cycling, and we started chatting about how the race was going and about what he was doing out there on the course, and Sean agreed graciously to go on mic with me and to talk to me a little bit about what he's doing here at the race. And so here's what Sean had to say after we both had our cup of coffee. I'm with Sean Farrell. Sean's the technical director for USA Cycling, and he's also here with the commissaires and the judges here at the race, and he's running the anti-doping controls. How's that going here at the Amgen Tour?
Anti-doping is going very smoothly here at the Tour of California. We are testing four riders every day, and we've had no issues whatsoever. The Amgen Tour of California organization has given me an excellent staff and excellent logistics, so we're rolling along very well today.
How do you choose those four riders who get tested?
This basically is a guideline by the UCI, who sets the rules for all international cycling. And every stage, we have to test four riders. That'll be the winner of the stage, the leader on general classification after the stage, and two riders at random, which are really just random draws.
And when do they learn that they've been chosen for the random drug test?
Most of the managers are going to learn that during the race. About 20 kilometers from the finish, we radio over Radio Tour who the random riders are and any reserve riders that we have drawn. We also post it at the facilities for anti-doping, and that's the ultimate way they have to. If anything doesn't go well, then the default value is they must come to anti-doping and read the list on the door and see their names.
Now, at the end of stage one, there was that crash and a decision a little bit beyond the rules. The rules say if it's within 3 kilometers that everybody's times are neutralized. This was a bit more than that, more than twice that. Didn't seem like a controversial decision. I agreed with it. It made nothing but sense. How much leeway do the judges have when they make decisions like that?
Well, the ultimate responsibility for all decisions with respect to the sporting nature of the race comes down to the panel of commissaires. And there is a clause in the UCI rules that says that the commissaires can decide to shorten, suspend, neutralize per whatever the situation is at the time. And that was their decision. When you have a crash that large, which on the first real stage was going to shred the whole bike race, basically, they decided that the spirit of the rule is once you get into the towns, close to the finish line, things get very, very hairy. That's why we have the 3-kilometer rule. At that point, you really are racing for the stage win, and you don't want the results to be affected for the overall race because of what really is coming down to essentially a criterium finish. And so everyone that rolled onto the course together and got in there at that one time was given the same time, and that was the decision of the panel of commissaires.
Makes sense. Now, I've been riding in the caravan the last couple of days, and I know that you've driven in the caravan before in various capacities. It's a bit of a dance out there. If there are any issues that occur out there among the drivers, can the commissaires impose any sanctions on the teams if anything should occur out there?
There are plenty of rules that allow the commissaires to issue penalties, whether it's simple warnings or fines, and then these fines can escalate from a low of, you know, $30 up to, you know, $700-$800, depending on the infraction. Usually that isn't too much of an issue at a race like this because these drivers are all superb. They would make any NASCAR driver proud with their ability to drive inches away from other people's bumpers and riders at high speeds and do so very safely. But it is, like you say, a bit of a dance out there. Cars are moving everywhere, riders are moving everywhere, and it takes some pretty good skills behind the wheel and really good focus on what's happening in your mirrors and in front of you and to avoid accidents. And sometimes it's amazing there aren't more. From someone that doesn't know what's going on to see that, they think that it's chaos, but in reality it's just a moving dance and everyone knows their part.
Good point. Thanks so much for talking to me.
You're very welcome.
I really appreciated the conversation with Sean because I think it points out the broad responsibility and jurisdiction that the panel of commissaires has at a stage race like the Tour of California, whether it's for the anti-doping controls or for the rules that the riders need to live by and the teams need to live by, all the way down to the cars in the caravan. Very wide range of responsibilities, and they really seem to handle their responsibilities very well. They take it very seriously, and as a result, it's a very well-oiled, tight-running machine. Well, as I mentioned earlier in my interview with Bob Roll, all indications going into today's stage pointed to the possibility that this might be one of the most critical stages in the entire race. The reason for this lies at about mile 73 out of today's 94.6 miles, and that reason is called Sierra Road. Sierra Road is the toughest climb in this entire week-long event. It's a Category 1 climb, the second toughest in the climb rating system, the next being the Beyond Category climb rating that we see in a lot of the European stage races, like the Tour de France. Once the riders hit that point in the course, it's a steep, and I mean steep, tight, and twisting 3.6 miles to the top of the climb. The entire climb today was jam-packed with spectators, especially on the steeper sections and particularly at the top of the hill. I was, by the way, parenthetically, I was impressed with the fact that so many of these amateur riders rode their bikes to the top of this hill. It is a lung and leg buster, no doubt about it. But before we talk any further about Sierra Road, which indeed really did turn out to be a critical point in today's race, let me tell you how the race went up to that point. Now, after a couple of parade laps through the streets of Stockton this morning, the riders headed out on a flat course through mostly agricultural land. There were a few attacks early in the race, and by the time the racers reached the first climb of the day at Patterson Pass, there was already a solid break of 17 riders, including veteran CSE rider Jens Voigt of Germany. At the top of the climb and nearly 35 miles into today's 95-mile event, the breakaway had a 2-minute, 35-second advantage over the rest of the peloton, and they were being led by Discovery Channel and Rabobank. Quite obviously, Discovery Channel wanted to make sure that they could protect their lead and make sure that Levi stayed in the golden jersey by the end of the day. Once the riders were over the top of Patterson Pass, they had a pretty fast ascent all the way down into the town of Livermore, California, for the first sprint points of the day. Jens Voigt was the first to pass the line for his bonus, followed by Jakob Pill of T-Mobile and Jürgen Vandewelle of Quickstep. Within a few miles after the sprint, the break had a 4-minute, 30-second advantage over the field, and they were all battling very strong crosswinds. You could see it when you're out there on the course. Flags were streaming right toward the riders in a way that the riders really don't want and can actually get quite dangerous in a peloton like this. Following another climb and then a feed zone at mile 54, and with Discovery and Rabobank working together, the peloton really began to put on the gas, and they did everything they could to try to make up the distance between themselves and the break. Meanwhile, up front in the breakaway, Jason McCartney of Discovery and Sean Milne of HealthNet attacked from the front of the break, and it turned out that McCartney was the one who really provided the most motivation to get the break moving and getting them tired. It turned out to be a great tactic on Discovery's part. The whole strategy of using McCartney to wear out the other riders in the breakaway seemed to work because as most of the original riders ended up getting caught by the field, Levi Leipheimer found his way to pass the field and catch up to Jens Voigt and the other riders who were off the front. And by the time the group reached the top of Sierra Road, and let me tell you, there is no doubt that Sierra Road was the one that separated the men from the boys today, because up until that point, there was the break, and there was the peloton, and everyone was together. By the time Sierra Road was over, the the peloton was split into 15 different groups and was very, very spread out. A lot of riders did not make the time cut today simply because of Sierra Road. Well, by the time they reached the top of Sierra Road, Levi Leipheimer had taken the King of the Mountain points for that portion of the course, and there were now only five riders at the front of the pack. Jens Voigt, Levi Leipheimer, Jason McCartney, Robert Gesink, and Chris Horner. When they reached the finishing stretch in downtown San Jose, the group had thinned to just three, and it was Jens Voigt who took the stage victory, with Levi Leipheimer in second place and Chris Horner in third. And by the way, before we move on, I just have to tell you, I'm going to urge you to go to the website at www.thefredcast.com. Again, I was out on the course taking pictures again today, and I got some great pictures of the breakaway group, especially as they were climbing Patterson Pass. And you've got to look at a group of three pictures that are in there because it's really interesting. If you think about the fact that Jens Voigt is in his mid-30s, and a lot of the guys that are out there riding on the course today are in their early 20s. Jens was the teacher today, and he taught the entire peloton something about racing. You can see it in this panel of three pictures that I took, because as they're coming up, Jens Voigt's right in the middle of the breakaway, and if you look at his hand and you watch him and watch the other riders, he's teaching them something about what they're going to be doing as they go over the top of the hill. And you can see him making a motion with his hand as if to say, when we go over, this is what we're going to do. It's a really telling couple of pictures, and I urge you to check it out. I have to say that Jens Voigt made an intelligent and very valiant effort today to win the stage, especially when you consider that he was with that lead group for nearly the entire stage. Well, despite his stage victory, his time and bonuses were not enough to overtake Levi Leipheimer for the overall lead, so Levi will spend another day in the Golden Leaders jersey. I had a chance to hear what the riders had to say after the event. Here's what Levi Leipheimer said about what he thought of today's race.
I think today was a bike race. It really was a battle out there, and all the riders from Discovery Channel suffered quite a bit. I personally saw, you know, Alan and Tony and Brian get dropped, come back, just suffering with the grimace on all day long. And, you know, I knew with Jason up there that was going to be the key. And when we went away on the climb, I didn't want to, you know, go too hard and go right past him and the group that we were catching because I needed him. And it worked out perfect. You know, I didn't have to let off that much. We still went up the climb pretty fast, and Jason was phenomenal in the end, really was.
It really was critical that Jason McCartney did what he did in order to break up that breakaway and give Levi a chance to come up and catch and pass those riders in order to join the lead group. And, you know, that's, of course, what you do when you're on a team, and that's one of the things that a lot of people don't get about professional cycling, is that it's not about the Lance Armstrongs and the Levi Leipheimers of the world. It is about the team, and without your team, you can't win bicycle races. Well, the same can be said about those people who are in a breakaway or who are in a lead group. Even if you're not on the same team, there's some deal-making that goes on, and there's a lot of working together. And if you don't work together, some animosity can build up, and people can get a little bit upset. Here's Chris Horner talking about the Rabobank rider that was with them, and when Levi asked who it was, here's what Chris had to say.
Well, I never saw the Rabobank rider that was with us because he never took a pool, so I couldn't even tell you who he was. I know he...
Was it just you and I up the climb, or was did he stay with us?
Yeah, he stayed with us going up the climb, but, you know, I never looked back, and I never saw who he was. Frankly, I don't understand the strategy. It seemed like it would have been good to work. And then you look at the finish where he's sitting on Jason's wheel. You can't play cat and mouse with Jason McCartney after he did the work he did. And so Jason just rode him straight out of the break, which didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, but maybe he's a young kid. Like I said, I don't know who he was. At the finish, he picked Jason's wheel, and Jason rode him straight out of the break.
Yeah, I think he's very strong, but he was a little inexperienced there, and yeah. Like you said, that was a mistake on his part.
And so, yes, it's a big peloton, but it's not that big, and they're going to remember if you do things right and if you don't. And Robert Gesink from Rabobank is a younger rider, and he probably has a little bit to learn in the pro peloton. But I just thought it was important for you to understand that even if you're not on the same team, you've got to pull together. And if you don't, you're going to get spanked, and that's exactly what happens in the pro peloton. In the press conference after stage one, Levi was asked how he felt about the rest of the race and whether he felt he could keep the golden jersey. And he really keyed in on Friday's stage five, which is the Solvang time trial. And he said that that was probably going to be the pivotal stage of the event. So today, when Levi was asked again, does he feel confident that he can keep the jersey? He started to talk once again about that Solvang time trial. And here's what he had to say, not only about his confidence level, but about his competition as well.
Jens, I don't know if you've noticed, but he can time trial pretty well. So... no, I'm certainly, I'm a long ways from the overall victory. I've always said it, I'd love to win here. I'm going to give it everything. I hope I have a good day on the time trial. And that's all I can say, really.
Yeah, it really comes down to the time trial is going to decide GC here for certain. I mean, the gaps aren't big enough to tip from today's stage to have decided the race. Today just decides the front group, and then the time trial decides who wins the race.
And now here's Jens Voigt describing his effort today, getting into the break and all the way up to the top of the climb and into the end of the stage.
We didn't really plan to be like this today, but I just followed a couple of moves at the start. Just happened to picking the right one. Everybody was working quite well, but then I saw them coming back to us really fast. So we only had, 1 minute, 1:20 at the bottom of the climb, and then I figured, okay, I really need to survive that first steep part of the climb. And, they caught me, 2 kilometers to go before the top. And it was actually pretty hard then to hang on there because I already invested a lot of power before. And it was quite hard to hang on. And, you know, Levi got a good rhythm going on the climb there. It was really, like, all I had to hang on there. But once we went over the top, I figured, okay, now I don't really need to ride anymore because I'm waiting for Bobby Julek for the next group. And so I didn't really have to, you know, work so much anymore. Could save my legs a little bit. And I figured, okay, I got a fair chance of winning the stage.
As I mentioned before, I have this great series of pictures of Jens Voigt going up one of the climbs, and he's really encouraging the younger riders and giving them some pointers about what they should be doing at this point in the race. And he was asked about whether or not he was encouraging the other riders, and this is what he had to say about that.
Once we had 20 seconds or 30 seconds at the start, I said, come on, you know, we really need to go now. We don't want to be caught again. And, things I like to say always in a situation like this is, you know, the finish line is in front of us. It's not behind us. So stop looking back, looking forward. And, yeah, just try to get the boys, you know what, work together. And for sure we're going to be outnumbering them, you know, because we have 17 riders working together. Okay, 16. You know, of course, McCartney wasn't allowed to ride. Of course, he's, you know. Because we had 16 riders and they only had 5 or 6 riding in the peloton. So I said, it just got to work out here.
And then came the big question, the question that they had asked Levi. How confident was Jens about whether or not he'd be able to snatch victory away from Levi Leipheimer in the time trial? Remember, Levi said, Jens is a pretty good time trialer. Here's what Jens had to say about that.
We will see. I mean, it's the first race of the year, so, you know, you're really like a little bit into the unknown, you know. It could be that I win with 1 minute at once, but it could be that I'm losing with 2 minutes. So it's really hard to say in a moment. I mean, we had our little secret time trial in our training camp. So I finished second there, and I think I was beaten by 1-2 seconds by Fabian Cancellara. So I hope I get it together and I'm doing a good one, hopefully. No, I mean, we got some serious contenders here, and it looks like Levi is really motivated for this one. He's really sharp. He's really, you know, obviously in good shape because on the climb he dropped everybody. I was just lucky that I had a little bit advanced before the climb. So it ain't over yet until the fat lady sinks. Can we say that? So, you know, we got to see what happens in the next days. I mean, yeah, we got a fair chance, that's for sure. But also Levi got a fair chance. He's a good rider or a great rider. He's a great time trialer. So it's still open. And today we only had, 10, 15 seconds to the next group behind us. So it's still really open. And also, with JJ, we had a really nice, fantastic win yesterday. Today also, it worked out a little bit lucky for us that I was able to hang on there. But as you could see on the first day, it didn't work out at all for us. So, you know, it's hard to say where it goes from here.
So how do you translate "it isn't over until the fat lady sings" in German?
I don't really know. I don't think we have an expression like that, actually. That's why I like to say it all the time, because it sounds funny to me.
So there you have it. That's the official word from Jens Voigt. It ain't over till the fat lady sings. So we'll see what happens over the next couple of days and for whom the fat lady will be singing on Sunday. Well, before we go, I had a chance to speak today with a very special individual. You'll recall that last year we spent a lot of time talking about professional racer, Crédit Agricole team member Saul Raisin. Saul was very seriously injured in a crash in a race early last year. He went down and he had what appeared to be a very, very severe brain injury. And he was in a coma for a very long time. And it was touch and go. And we talked about it a lot here on the Fredcast. And as if you've been a long listener, you well know, Saul did come out of the coma. He was able to go home. He's been in rehabilitation. And he's finally back on his bike. As a matter of fact, he's been at the Crédit Agricole training camp for the last few weeks. And I saw Saul riding Sierra Road today and caught up with him at the finish line before the Pro Peloton came through. And it turns out that Saul has been riding every stage of the Amgen Tour of California, but he's been doing it with groups of amateur cyclists. He leaves before the pros start, and he finishes before the pros finish, and he's looking very, very strong. He was on his way to meet with his team after the race, and he had not very much time to talk with me, but he was gracious enough with his time, and here's what Saul had to say about how he's doing and what his plans are for the future.
I caught up with Saul Raisin here at the finish line, stage 3 in San Jose. Saul, you rode the race course today. How was it?
Oh, it was awesome. Another 6 hours on the bike. I've done 6 hours 3 days in a row. So, you know, the crowds are amazing in California. I mean, absolutely amazing going up Sierra Road. I mean, I bet there's 50,000 people on the climb. It's awesome. So.
And how are you feeling personally?
I get stronger as the days go by, and especially with the support I'm given. You know, everyone's saying, go Saul, go Saul. It's awesome. So.
Now, you did the Crédit Agricole training camp. How'd that go for you?
I was actually the strongest guy at camp. Like, it was awesome. You know, we did a 35-hour training week, and, you know, we raced up all the climbs, and I was flying, so I did awesome.
And what are your plans for the rest of the year?
My ultimate goal is to get back to racing, and March the 31st is going to be Saul Raisin Hope ride for brain and spinal cord injury. And I told my mom in the hospital bed, I said, Mom, if I ever get back on the bike, I want to give back to the people that helped me. And that's what I want to do to this day. So,
real good. Saul, it's great to talk to you and good to see you.
All right, thank you.
All I can say is Saul looks strong. He looks awesome. And it was great to see him, great to talk to him, and great to see him back on a bike. And to hear that he was one of the stronger guys at the Crédit Agricole training camp, I think he'll be back to racing real soon. And as we've said for months and months and months, Saul, we wish you nothing but luck. And we hope that your charity ride raises a lot of money for brain and spinal cord injuries. Well, that's going to do it for tonight's episode of the Fredcast Semi-Live from the 2007 Amgen Tour of California. We're here in Monterey tonight. Tomorrow's a pretty long stage. We go from Seaside, California, right here on the Monterey Peninsula, all the way down to San Luis Obispo. This is the longest stage of the race, and there are 3 King of the Mountain climbs on this stage. It's a very scenic stage, but I doubt the riders are going to have any time, to enjoy the scenery. If you'd like to send me an email, please do so. My email address, thefredcast@gmail.com. Of course, you can send a voicemail anytime to the Fredcast listener hotline. That's 206-203-FRED. And I strongly encourage you to go to the website at www.thefredcast.com. Get a load of the photos I've been taking out there on the race course. Trust me, folks, it's not my eye. I've just had an amazing vantage point, and I've enjoyed doing it. Our coverage continues with Stage 4 tomorrow. Not quite sure how the internet access is going to be at the hotel tomorrow and whether or not I'll be able to post the show, but I will get it up as soon as possible. I hope you're enjoying the coverage. Enjoy your Thursday, but most of all, enjoy the ride.